Blog Talk Radio.
I'm not afraid. Yeah. It's been a ride. Everybody, I guess I had to go to that place to get to this one. Now, some of you might still be in that place. If you're trying to get out, just follow me. I'll get you.
You can try and read my lyrics off of this paper before I lay them, but you won't take the sting out these words before I say them. Cause ain't no way I'm gonna let you stop me from causing mayhem. When I say I'm gonna do something, I do it. I don't give a damn what you think. I'm doing this for me. So fuck the world, beat it, beans. It's cashed up. If you think you're stopping me, I'm gonna be what I set out to be. Without a doubt, undoubtedly. And all those who look down on me, I'm tearing down your balcony. No exams or buts, don't try to ask him why, how can he? From infinite down to the last relapse, I'm gonna be still sitting. Whether he's on salary, paid hourly, until he bows out or he sits his bowels out of him. Whichever comes first, for better or worse. He's married to the game, like a fuck you for Christmas. His gift is a curse. Forget the earth, he's got the earth to pull his dick from the dirt and fuck the whole universe. I'm not afraid.
Good afternoon, OWS supporters. This is day 53 of Occupy Wall Street. My name is Dusty, and I'm your host today. Hopefully you can hear me, because it doesn't sound right on my end. Let me turn this up a little. Oh, there we go. Okay, like I said, this is day 53, and we're going to go, first thing, we're going to start off with the most recent Oakland Police Department violence. Keith Olbermann is going to be interviewing the videographer, Scott Campbell, whose own footage actually captures the moment he was shot for no fucking reason. And he is still recuperating, as it was a pretty severe wound that he got from their one of their so-called bean bags. You need to watch the video to get the full ugly and graphic effect of it. There was no warning by the OPD or any provocation by Scott or any of the other protesters when they shot off the round at him. Like I usually tell everybody at the beginning of the show, everything that we discuss on the show, I will have links to, including videos, on my blog, leftwingnutjob.net, after the end of the show. And this show, it is called Here Be Monsters. It's brought to you by Roundtree7.com. That's the number 7. It's a blog of wonderful writers, of which I'm one of them. The show is hosted usually by Gwen Berry, but I do every Tuesday. Anyway, the back to the Oakland Police Department's latest fuckery. The ACLU has been requesting records from them on various issues also, and of course the OPD is refusing to cooperate. But let's go back to what I was originally speaking about, which is videographer Scott Campbell, who captured his own footage of when the assholes from the OPD shot him for no apparent reason, which was something that's known as a beanbag. And I'm going to go ahead and play that interview that Keith Olbermann does with him now. I think Keith also runs down some of the latest bullshit that happened over the weekend. This is from Keith's show, Countdown, yesterday.
Over the weekend, the Occupy movement passed 50 consecutive days of protesting, and sadly, it also passed its first point-of-view shooting of one of its own participants. And our fourth story is a busy weekend of police arresting occupiers spilled into today. More video showing just how much Oakland Police Department has lost control of its ranks emerged. In Chicago today, hundreds of senior citizens marched in Federal Plaza to protest cuts to Medicare and Social Security after a sit-in brought traffic to a halt. 47 of the protesters were arrested. In New York City, protests today, joined by local nonprofit groups and labor unions. Protesters went on an 11-mile march in an attempt to connect all of New York's communities. In terms of police response, today's march, a far cry from Saturday, when at least 20 protesters were arrested as they marched on the New York Supreme Courthouse. Elsewhere, 13 arrested in Fresno after their permit to remain in their park expired. 11 more from Occupy Riverside, California. 11 members arrested in Orlando while participating in a peaceful teach-in. Some in costume. In Atlanta, 19 protesters arrested in Woodruff Park over the weekend for remaining in that park past curfew. 5 more arrested early this morning. But all eyes remain on Oakland after the police department again squandered goodwill built during its comparatively low-key response the night of trouble during the general strike. Occupy Oakland rallied with Occupy San Francisco for a successful bank transfer day. Over the past week, 650,000 customers moved their money to local credit unions, a total of $4.5 billion. but the scars of last week's violence continuing to show. Kaivan Sebagi, the second Iraq veteran to be sent to intensive care by Oakland PD, continues to recuperate after surgery to repair a ruptured spleen, allegedly caused by police batons. A new video is out today that shows just how much the Oakland PD lost control of their own last Thursday. Quick preface, the video you are about to see is graphic in nature.
Okay? Is this okay?
Joining me now, Scott Gamble, a participant in the Occupy Oakland movement and the victim of that unprovoked police attack. Mr. Campbell, thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you kindly for having me on.
First off, how are you?
I am healing day by day. I'm feeling a little better, but still in quite a bit of pain with some severe swelling and bruising.
Do you mind if we show the picture of what that looked like?
If viewers want to see it, it's graphic, but sure, go ahead.
Yeah, it pretty much is. Did you have any idea that that was about to happen? I mean, was that at the... Let me take it back before I even ask you that question. As that tape starts, is that your voice asking, is this okay? Were you asking essentially for police permission to videotape?
Yes, that's correct. I was approaching the line, an officer told me to stop, and so I stepped back 5 to 10 feet and asked the officer if this was okay, and he didn't respond, and I figured I was in public space, it was legal to film the police, I was a decent distance away, and that's when I began filming.
What was the rest of the situation that we can't see in this videotape? Were there other protesters behind you, or was it essentially just you walking towards your own right there?
There were several protesters behind me, but I was a bit away, a bit separated from the rest of the crowd. There was really absolutely nothing going on. It was a calm scene. People were milling about, sort of seeing what was going to happen next. And I, after I was shot, some people ran up and helped me, but there was no provocation or violence of any kind underway.
Any warning? Any of them, whoever shot you, anything from any of those officers? Any indication they were about to move?
No, there was absolutely no warning whatsoever. There was no order to disperse. There was no warning that weapons might be used. And in fact, after I was shot, the police officers remained there, and I was well out of the scene before they even moved further into the plaza.
I'm assuming you were not arrested or detained. Was anything happen involving the authorities after that? Has there been a word from the Oakland PD? Did the mayor send you a note? Anything like that?
I have not heard a word from the Oakland Police or City Hall. I've been in touch with several journalists who have been trying to get comments from both of those agencies, and both have so far declined to comment. So I'd be very interested in hearing what their response was to this unprovoked shooting.
So your response to this, I guess, would have to be you were walking, the police told you to back up a little bit, you backed up, you then asked if it was all right where you were, and you were filming this, and nobody stopped you, nobody said a word, until some guy simply shot you without any warning. Is that about it?
That's exactly correct. What you see in the video is exactly what happened.
Well, did you ever theorize, even going in knowing the troubles that there have been between the Oakland PD and the Occupy protesters, that something like this was imaginable as happening to you or anybody else?
I feel that any time you go out to a demonstration, especially in Oakland, which has a legacy of police violence not only against the Occupy movement and protesters in general, but against the community, especially people of color, that there's always a chance that they'll use violence when it's completely uncalled for. But a situation like this, it reminds me more of scenes from the West Bank and mm-hmm. Israeli assaults on Palestinian nonviolent protesters than happening in the city center of Oakland, California.
Well, I mean, it reminds me more of some of those black humor comedy sketches where the cop shoots or somebody shoots and then says, stop or I'll shoot, after shooting. Are you going to go back? I mean, is this enough for you, or will you go back to those protests?
Oh, I'll certainly go back. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to so far. My mobility has been extremely limited in the past days. I can, you know, hardly walk and just being able to get myself around. But as soon as I'm able to get out of the house, I will be going back to Occupy Oakland.
Is there anything, what kind of camera was that? Is there any way they could have mistaken that for something other than a camera?
I don't think so at all. I was holding it up. It was obvious that I was filming. It's a small sort of point-and-shoot digital camera. It's not a video camera. And in my other hand, which you can't see in the video, I was holding up a peace sign to show my intent was nonviolent. And they still shot me. And you would think that if they felt under threat, someone would have acted before 30 seconds had passed.
Well, it probably took them that long to figure out that your fingernails constituted a threat to them. Scott
Something
Campbell,
like that.
The victim at Occupy Oakland, I think it's tremendous of you to share this with us, and we wish you obviously the best in your recovery physically and psychologically.
Thank you kindly, and thank you for sharing this with the rest of the world.
Of course. Thank you. America 2011, welcome. You've just been shot. The 13,000 jobs at the dangerous Keystone XL.
All righty, and that was Keith Olbermann interviewing Scott Campbell, who got shot for no fucking reason, just because he was doing a video of the line of police in full riot gear, of course, at Occupy Oakland last week. God bless those fucking bastards. As I said earlier, the ACLU has been trying to get some information from when the Marine was shot back on the 25th on their site, the ACLU of Northern California. It's aclunc.org/issue/freedom-of-the-press-and-speech. They have an article entitled ACLU to OPD. No, seriously, hand over the info. The Oakland Police Department oversaw the use of excessive force against Occupy Oakland demonstrators, and now the department is refusing to hand over information about what really happened. The ACLU of Northern California and the National Lawyers Guild has sent a public records request about OPD's use of force on the night of October 25th, 2011, on demonstrators supporting Occupy Oakland. The response we received is both infuriating and misguided. What's new there? The OPD's chief of staff prefaced the department's response to us with this, quote, "The Oakland Police Department understands that the greater and more unfettered the public official's power, the greater the public interest in monitoring the governmental action. We recognize and acknowledge your October 25, 2011 request furthers our commitment to this obligation," unquote, end quote. Then the email went on to say that the OPD was refusing to provide almost all of the information we had requested. Not only is this a complete contradiction, it also reveals something very troubling. Police officers actually do not have unfettered discretion in using force against political protesters. It's constrained by, among other things, the constitutional prohibition against excessive force and OPD's own crowd control policy, which we previously noted, was repeatedly breached that night. Juxtaposed against OPD's decision to withhold reports documenting its use of force that night, a decision we think misguided as a matter of law and policy. Then in quotes it says, see our letter back to OPD today. It's got a link to that one. OPD's response underscores the gap between its policy and practice. The agency has a great crowd control policy, but it doesn't abide by it. The agency celebrates its quote-unquote commitment to, quote, the public's interest in monitoring governmental action, unquote, but withholds essential documents. It's time for OPD to close the gap and live up to its word. Given the seriousness of what happened that night on October 25, 2011, the public has a right to full disclosure. And while we're on this topic, OPD should really start following its own policies. That would help prevent messes like this. And that's, like I said, a letter the ACLU has up on its site, the ACLU of Northern California. There's also another really great piece on their same site that's called When Will the Oakland Police Learn? and I'm not going to go into that one right now, but that's a, I'll have the link to that on my site later too, but that's a really good read too. They describe a 2003 incident that the way they say it here is eerily similar to the reports of OPD's response to the Occupy Oakland demonstration on August 25th. So, you know, once again, the Oakland Police Department, you know, is just bucking up left and right, and they don't feel that they have to answer to anybody. God love those bastards. But all those links will be up on my website later on. And like I said, they have a nice long history of police brutality. I read that. I went into that in detail either last Tuesday or the Tuesday before. My blood pressure is going up as I say this, so I think I'm going to move on to another subject, one that's a little bit more lighthearted. I call this one, We Can't Call Them Kids Anymore. This is from Raw Story. The link will be up. It's the seniors block busy Chicago street to protest cuts to social programs. Seniors block a busy Chicago street to protest cuts to social programs. Chicago police on Monday issued citations to 43, count them, 43 senior citizens and their supporters who linked arms to block an intersection near the city's financial district. The action was part of a protest against proposed cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and other benefits. The Jane Addams Senior Caucus and their supporters and Occupy Chicago began the demonstration with a rally outside the office of Illinois Senators Mark Kirk, who's a Republican, Dick Durbin, a Dem, and somebody else. Who else? Oh, James Schakowsky. The group, which organizers claimed was nearly 1,500 strong, then marched on to the Federal Plaza. Interesting enough, the protesters were also joined by Durbin and Jane Schakowsky, a Democrat, Danny Davis, a Democrat, and Mike Quigley, a Democrat, that morning. The Raw Story write-up also has a great video of this little bit of a march, courtesy of the independent YouTube reporter John Sheehan. So I highly suggest that one. It's a great read. I really hope that some of these things that I bring up here that you guys will check them out, because I just kind of just, you know, blow through them a little bit just to give you an idea of you know, information that you can use and, you know, tells you a little bit more about what's going on out there. So like I said, we can't really call them kids anymore, because 43 old people got arrested just so they could prove their point, you know, and I love the hell out of that. Another point that the OWS movement has been trying to make lately is how they're disgusted with the cronyism within the federal government, with a group that I personally like to call the corporatocracy. And precisely today I'm speaking about the Keystone XL pipeline bullshit and the federal department, specifically the State Department, and that they have their noses so far up the lobbyist asses that they know what those motherfuckers have had for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And another good point of fact on these protests is that they've been protesting for months in front of both the Capitol and the White House, and they've had plenty of arrests so far. Keith Olbermann, actually, on Monday night, also interviewed Bill McKibben. He's the founder of a website called 350.org, which is a great clearinghouse of sorts for information on this pipeline and all the bullshit cronyism and the ongoing protest against it in D.C. I'm going to go ahead and play a clip of Keith interviewing Bill McKibben on the XL pipeline. I do feel this is relevant to, like I said, the Occupy Wall Street movement, because it's all about the cronyism between the State Department and these friggin' lobbyists for this pipeline. Bear in mind that this pipeline is going to run from Canada all the way through the entire United States down to the Gulf of Mexico. But here's KO interviewing Bill McKibben on the XL pipeline bullshit.
Ted Mack's original Dumont Amateur Hour will not be seen tonight, so we can instead bring you Countdown, the longest continuously running 8 p.m. news hour on cable unless you consider Fox News. Primary replays at 11 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific. We call it our little guest lecture. the chief executive of the company that would build it, has now admitted he padded the estimate of jobs it would create, doubling, perhaps tripling, the reality. In our third story on the countdown, now the State Department's chief investigator has announced today a review of the approval process for the 1,700-mile, $7 billion Keystone XL pipeline, which would carry dangerous heated oil sludge from Canada to the Gulf of Mexico, except wherever it spilled it. This comes a day after thousands of protesters linked hands and surrounded the White House in a peaceful but forceful demonstration.
Hey, Obama! We don't want no climate drama! Hey, Obama! We don't want no climate drama! Hey, Obama! We don't want no climate drama! Stop the pipeline!
Among other things, the State Department is going to look into cozy friendships between Canadian pipeline officials and American governmental officials. A decision was expected this year but could be delayed. Its memo read in part, the primary objective of the review is to determine to what extent the department and all other parties involved complied with the federal laws and regulations relating to the Keystone XL pipeline permit process. Then there were the claims that the whole thing would create 20,000 jobs, or was it 13,000, or was even that number based on something called one job, one year, in which a construction position that lasted 2 years would be counted as two jobs. TransCanada's chief executive, Russ Girling, finally admitted there would only be 6,500 new jobs, which now turns out to have been around half the number of those who protested the pipeline at the White House.
Thank you, guys. We're looking at it right now. All right, no decision's been made. And I know your deep concern about it.
Let's bring in one of the organizers of yesterday's protest and the protests throughout this process, Bill McKibben. Bill, good to talk to you again.
Good to be with you as always, Keith.
Have you got them on the run, do you think?
Well, you know, 6 months ago it was 100-1 against us. Those odds have narrowed a lot. The oil companies still have more money than God. But after yesterday, this has become the biggest environmental and really the biggest political flashpoint that Obama's got to deal with, and there's at least some signs that they're paying attention now.
Is there an indication that the president himself is paying attention and may in fact have stepped in the State Department to get to at least put in this? Obviously, it's justified because if there was contact between the lobbyists and representatives of our government in Canada, that was inappropriate. There should be an investigation, but the investigation by itself slows the process down for a certain period of months. Is there any suggestion that the president has heard this directly and got involved,
well,
or would we even know that?
We wouldn't know. Much credit to Bernie Sanders for being the guy who really pushed forward, and Representative Steve Cohen, who spoke at yesterday's rally.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's going on is they're beginning to realize this is their base. The people who elected them last time, there were college kids descending from around the East Coast on buses yesterday. They're the ones who were lined up around dorm rooms, you know, three deep, waiting to vote in 2008. Now they're lined up around the White House three deep, not angry exactly, saying, we want that Obama from 2008, the one who said, I'm going to be the guy that ends the tyranny of oil. In my administration, the rise of the oceans will begin to slow. We know some of the time Congress has gotten in his way, but not this time. He's got an absolutely clear shot. 20-foot jumper, top of the key. Will he square up and take it?
Other than the sort of extra halftime that it provided to continue the analogy, what do you think the meaning is of that State Department special investigation of itself?
I think it means that the process was so crooked and inept that they had no choice but to investigate. There was a story that came out last week saying that basically one 20-something employee had been the only person assigned by the State Department to do this. I mean, you can't get a permit for a strip mall in the most environmentally lax state in the union with that kind of review. If we're going to do environmental impact statements that way, we might as well just sort of assign them to random junior high school civics classes. It was terrible. That's only half the battle, though. The process is wrong-headed, but that's the least part of this. It's the substance that, in the end, is the real problem. This tar sands in Alberta is the second largest pool of carbon on Earth. Only the oil fields of Saudi Arabia are larger. When we plumbed the oil fields in Saudi Arabia, we didn't know about climate change. Now that we do, if we just repeat the same thing, then we're idiots. And that's why Jim Hansen, our foremost climatologist, said, tap this stuff heavily, and it's game over for the climate. As bad as the process is, it's that reality that's the real trouble here.
And by the way, I think turning it over to junior high school civics classes would be an improvement from the federal government under almost all circumstances. last point, the company's job creation estimate has dropped from 20,000 to 13,000 to 6,500, or was it 6,500 all along and they just padded it with this one-year, one-job nonsense?
Well, here's the most amazing part of this thing. The only study not funded by TransCanada, funded by a labor think tank, as it turns out, shows that the plan will kill as many jobs as it'll create because it's going to raise gas prices across the Midwest. For weeks now, reporters, lazy reporters, have repeated this jobs versus the environment theme. Now that the Washington Post has done that excellent story and made it clear that even those job numbers that they're talking about are just crazy. They depend on things like this pipeline motivating modern dance companies to move from New York out to Nebraska and set up shop there. I mean, it's not. I mean, the whole thing is just as crazy as can be. We'll see if it's enough to kind of break the reporting out of this lazy, tired theme. The only place we've really got jobs, and there are millions of them, is when we decide to go to clean energy, when we start insulating homes and putting solar panels on top, the kind of jobs that those guys who are no longer building McMansions know how to do. That's what we need to do, and we really need the president to step up and get us on that path.
Tap dancing on the pipelines. Bill McKibben, environmentalist, educator, founder, 350.org. Great thanks, Bill.
All righty, and we have a caller. Caller, area code 205. You're on.
Hi, Dusty. This is Dick from Birmingham.
Hi, Dick. How you doing? Dick? Dick, can you hear me? Turn down your radio if you have it on, honey. Oh, you hung up or dropped the call. Damn it. Anyway, as Bill McKibben was saying, that wonderful pipeline was supposed to make us some, create us 20,000 jobs. Now it's down to either 3,000 jobs or 6,000 jobs, depending on who you listen to. Another point I was going to make today was, you know, these corporations and their lobbyists, you know, they'll lie through their teeth to get anything through the federal government. And obviously the federal government's buying it all lock, stock, and barrel. So I had written a recent article lately about corporations, and, you know, now that thanks to the Supreme Court, they're people now. Corporations are people. So if they're people, why aren't they paying their taxes like the rest of us? And Think Progress has a really good article on this, which kind of circles back to Occupy Wall Street, because it says, interestingly enough, the financial institutions are getting the biggest tax subsidies. God bless those bastards. The list is huge of the corporations that have paid less taxes than all the human beings, all the human taxpayers in the U.S. combined. And I have the graphic up on my website. It says you paid more taxes than, and it names, God, one, I don't know, about 20 of them or something. And it says, we paid more taxes than all these corporations combined. And Think Progress also, by the way, has a really good article up that I'll have the link to about the federal investigation the Inspector General is going to do on the Keystone XL pipeline and how there is finally going to be an investigation on those bastards. It's being launched in response to a congressional request. I don't know if it was requested by a Democrat or a Republican. Hard to say at this point. But the State Department's Office of Inspector General has launched a review of the Keystone XL pipeline approval process. The State Department is tasked with conducting the environmental review of TransCanada's proposed tar sands pipeline from Canada to Texas for a presidential permit decision. Beginning with the Bush administration, the process has been largely outsourced to a contractor chosen and paid for by, guess who? TransCanada. And like Bill Kibben said, there's only been one single staffer overseeing the entire friggin' thing. Meanwhile, lobbyists with close ties to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton have aggressively pushed for approval on behalf of the foreign oil company. The request for an investigation, oh, here it is, was made by Senator Bernie Sanders, God love him, independent from Vermont, Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat from Oregon, and Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat from Rhode Island, and 11 Democratic members of the House of Representatives. As Bill McKibben said, the original job projection by the lobbyists themselves was that it would create over 20,000 jobs. Now it's down to 6,000, and other groups are suggesting it's closer to 3,000 jobs. It's just, you get to the point where you're just tired of, you know, we want jobs. We're asking, we keep asking, where are the fucking jobs? Stay out of, you know, women's vaginas and everything else that they're doing, you know, in the House of Representatives. Just create us some friggin' jobs and, you know, provide us with some transparency to all this crap you're doing. Sank over at Young Turks has got a short little speech on the Keystone Pipeline bullshit, so I'm going to go ahead and play that too. So, because whoever called in, unfortunately, his call got dropped. If anybody would like to call in today and have something to discuss, the guest call-in number is area code 213-816-0357. I'd really appreciate it if somebody would call in today. It's very cold here in the south end of the San Joaquin Valley, and it's damp because it's been raining, so my back is freaking killing me. But anyway, here is Sank from the Young Turks talking about the Keystone Pipeline bullshit.
The Keystone XL Pipeline, there's a lot of protests over this. 10,000 people showed up this weekend to the White House, circled the White House, held hands, put up, you know, a version of the pipeline, had demonstrations. Celebrities down there like Mark Ruffalo, et cetera. And it turns out, of course, the president was out playing golf, so he missed the whole thing. The reality of how this works is that it turns out that when they were doing the legislation on the Keystone Pipeline, they would, when they ask for an environmental review, they go to the State Department. Okay, that part makes sense. Where does the State Department go for the environmental review? Well, it turns out that they contract that out to a private contractor. Who is the contractor chosen by? It turns out it's chosen by TransCanada. Well, that's the company who's doing the pipeline. So the company doing the pipeline chooses the contractor that decides whether the pipeline is environmentally safe. And they report back to our government, and apparently we have one person working there who then is supposed to check in on those contractors and say, did they do a good job of assessing how wonderfully environmentally safe this pipeline is? Oh, they did. Fantastic. And by the way, later I'll work for that same company, because that's usually how it works, right? So that's how our system gets corrupted. In fact, there's emails from lobbyists for the same companies writing to Hillary Clinton saying, oh, great, great to have you guys in office. Remember when we used to work together? Give us that pipeline.
You know what? Sank's saying the same shit I just did, so I really think I'm kind of wasting everybody's time by repeating it. Caller, you're on the line from area code 760. Hello?
Hello?
Hi there.
Hello, is that me?
That's you, honey.
Well, that's nice. I'm not in 760. I don't know why it says that, and I get confused every time. But
Is this Buffon?
Yeah.
Hi, sweetie. How you doing?
I don't have anything to add.
How you
doing?
No,
you go ahead. could be better.
Yeah, we
but
all
of
could.
Of course. who couldn't?
I know, that's right.
I don't have anything. I don't really have much to add, but you sounded desperate for callers, so I thought I'd call.
Bless your heart. I really could use it, because when you call in, I get to stand up.
You can't talk while you're sitting down?
No, because, well, I can't read my notes and stuff. So,
oh, well, okay.
Yeah, I can't read my notes and you know, that way because of where my computer is and everything, I can't read my notes. So I gotta sit down, and that's what kills my back, is when I have to sit down for more than 15 minutes at a time.
My back's been hurting for about the last week.
Oh, God. So how are you feeling about the Occupy Wall Street movement? Do you think it's growing? Do you think it's accomplishing something?
Well, cynic that I am, it does seem to have opened up a little bit of dialogue or something. Although, you know, I mean, I'm not really sure what actual long term good it does in changing anyone's mind. You know, mostly because, I mean, it should be obvious to anyone who has, you know, two brain cells to rub together that normal people or people who work for a living or average Americans have been getting screwed consistently economically for the last 30 years, and the slightest glance at any statistics or charts or graphs or anything that, you know, that I run across on the internet and all these left-wing commie sites, you know, it should be obvious that people are getting screwed, and yet they just keep, you know, sucking it up and going, oh, well, get a job, you bums, and all this stuff.
Well, no, I agree. We've been getting screwed for quite a while. I think what makes this different now is that people are finally getting together as a group, and they're making their pissed off. They're making it known that they're pissed off.
Well, yeah, but I mean that, you know, it's not like there are 100,000 people in downtown of every major city every day or anything. It's, you know,
no,
a few.
But it's growing. It's growing every day. It is. It's growing every day, and there's more. There's what, over how many cities did I say one day? I can actually look it up if you want me to. How many cities they have it at? It's quite a few. So, you know, if you're looking for a million people in each city, it's going to take a while for that to happen.
Well, it's going to take a while. I think it's going to take a lot more people out of work or cut off from Social Security and Medicare or something to do that.
Well, what they're doing. That's what they're trying to do, and I think that's why people are finally saying that they're really tired of it. You know, there's over 200 cities right now that are having different, you know, different activities and different actions.
Well, yeah, I know. I guess we'll have to wait a year for the election to see what comes of that. Although I understand there are some elections today.
Yes, so there are, and there's some big elections today. There's that big one in Ohio, where they're going to hopefully tell Kasich to shove it up his ass about you know, shit canning the union's right to bargain.
Well, yeah, that I haven't been following that really closely, but the polls certainly looked as if that's going to be defeated. So we hope.
Oh, really? The poll I looked at said different. I saw a poll that said the opposite. It looked like it was going to pass.
Well, I don't remember which is the good side on it. Isn't voting no the right thing to do?
Oh, well, see, I'm not from that state, so I can't tell you. I don't know how it's worded. And you know, and since you and I are both from California, it does depend on how they word these things. It does depend on how they word these things on whether you're voting the right way or not. You really got to read them good to, you know, to tell how to vote.
Yeah, well, I think you're supposed to vote no. I know that Thunder guy left a message on my little dump that he had voted no, no, and hell no. So.
Oh.
I think no on SB5 is the politically correct or common sense way to vote. But
yeah.
But like I say, and they can't always word them backwards too. So.
Yeah, no, and that's what they do in California a lot. Is if you just skim over it, you can vote the wrong way, and I've noticed that plenty of times. To get back to whether you think the movement's actually going to do anything, I brought this up on that piece that Zombie wrote, where you know, it took 13 years before anything happened with the civil rights movement. So it depends on how long people are going to hold out. You know, how long people are going to be able to hang in there to see if anything's actually going to happen.
Well, you mean 13 years from...
From the time Rosa Parks parked her ass in the bus and refused to move until they passed the Civil Rights Bill. That was 13 years. And, you know, if you think about it, we're still fighting for civil rights, for people of color and for people, transgendered people in the whole nine yards. That fight is still going on to this day.
Yeah, which just makes me want to give up if I can't have it all right away. But I guess that's my problem.
I think a lot of people feel like you that aren't into the movement, that they want instant gratification, and I don't think that's going to happen.
No, I'm sure it won't. That doesn't mean I can't hope for it.
No, we can all hope for it, but it's going to take a while, and the sad part is that, you know, the cops and the state and local governments are doing everything they can to shut it down.
Well, yeah, they certainly seem to. I understand there was some sort of
Oakland. Oakland's horrible right now. Oakland, the cops in Oakland, you know, who've got a long history, decades of history of violence, they're doing it. But if you will notice, will you agree with me that every time one of these police brutality things gets national exposure, you find more people out in the streets?
Well, I mean, it's... That's a double-edged sword, because there are just as many people who are, I don't know about just as many people, but there are plenty of people who are saying, well, why aren't they really showing these low-life bums, all of whom have lice and are, you know, molesting each other and having public sex? You know, there's still millions of people who think that, you know, I mean, essentially there's the authoritarian mindset. And no amount of, you know, facts or decency, I think, are ever going to wake those people up. That's why I'm suspicious of politics in general, because I don't think that anything is being done that's based on, you know, facts or issues or reality. It's all, you know, they have the certain mindset of the, you know, I mean, the scared conservative who lives in fear of, you know, virtually anything, and wants the police to beat the crap out of anything that's the least bit out of line or threatening or suspicious. And you know, no amount of, gosh, look at this, see how you're not making the money you should be, is going to convince people like that otherwise. So...
Well. I look at it this way. I think everybody's been grumbling and bitching about how they've been getting screwed. I think what's finally waking people up is that they realize that other people are feeling the same way, and they're not afraid to stand up in the street and say it.
Well, you know, I mean, that happens either way, but... Well, I don't know. I'm just a depressed and cynical old bastard.
Well, you know, we all get that way. I get so depressed. I know I don't even watch political shows sometimes for a week at a time. But you know, but I still believe that if we unify, like Zombie's piece said, that we can accomplish something. We can actually affect change. So do you think that can happen?
Well, even if we, you know, unify, whatever that may mean, I think as long as there's money in politics, you know, until we get complete public financing of all campaigns and, no one's allowed to give any money to anyone, and they just, and everyone just gets, you know, every candidate just gets a flat amount of money to compete. You know, the politicians are always going to be for sale because they're not going to really have to be responsible to their constituents. So, you know, you, until it's a question of what you actually do as a politician rather than what your campaign financiers and corporations want you to do, I'm not sure even how much, how many unified people are going to make that much of a difference.
Well, I can see your point, but I don't see how I don't see how that ties in with Occupy Wall Street.
Well, I mean, you know, how many of those people, that many, are actually going to vote?
Well,
half of them. You know, and then, of course, you know, even if they do vote and the right people are voted in, it only takes one jerk in the Senate to put a hold on a bill or whatever. And, you know, we've seen, I mean, you know, I don't know what the deal is with Obama and all the Democrats, and they had some sort of majority for those first couple years back there.
No,
and
he did. I agree. He did.
Some things were done, but not as well, you know, not as many as we'd liked. I wasn't instantly gratified, so.
I never believed that Obama was a liberal, so I never thought Obama was going to do everything he promised anyway, because he was first and foremost a politician. So, I have more faith in the Occupy Wall Street protesters than I do in Obama. Because those people are willing to sleep in the fucking street to make their point. And to me, that says a lot.
Well, that's take my word for it, and ending up sleeping on the streets is not something you want to do. But
no, it's not. But I'm saying if you believe in something so strongly that you're willing to do that, then those are people that I trust a lot more than I trust Barack Obama at this point.
Yeah. Yes, I'll give you that. But
Thank you. No, I appreciate it.
I'm just not sure what actual effect on things any of this is going to do. I think there are just too many people who are, you know, not even politically conscious, but are sort of psychologically conscious, and it gets turned into right-wing politics or right-wing voting or whatever. And that, you know, I mean, as a one-time wannabe hippie and then a more or less punk and so on, I, you know, I have to laugh at drum circles and stuff like that, but that's hard to say. And, of course, the other thing is that, you know, you and I and all of our internet friends and so on are, like, conscious and aware and look at stuff on the internet and think about it, and the average freaking American doesn't know anything and doesn't think about it and doesn't want to know or think about it because, you know, they're too busy putting food on their family, as they say, or whatever, or trying to get a job so they can put food on their family.
That's true. No, I agree with you on that. People get their news in 30-second sound bites from the networks every night. And that's why the bigger this gets and the longer it lasts, the corporate media can't keep ignoring it. So it's who's going to outlast who, I guess, is what I'm thinking is, you know, if the protesters are going to be able to hang out past winter, the corporate media just can't keep ignoring them. And so those little 30-second sound bites that most Americans get, they're going to start hearing about this every single night. And I think all these guys really want to do is start a conversation about the injustice and the inequality, both economic and political and social.
Yeah, but I think what the networks are going to do mostly is just say, oh, you know, police tried to get dirty people out of the park and stuff was thrown at the police, you know, without actually saying, oh, isn't that terrible? But I think that's what a lot of the coverage is or is going to be, rather than, you know, hey, look, here are these people and they have a point to make and we're going to help them make it.
Well, you know, some of them are. Like, Time Magazine's got an article up right now where it says, Occupy Oakland embraces nonviolence but debates the black bloc tactic. And those are the people that the anarchists in Oakland that started all the bullshit last week. And of course, the corporate media does glom onto any and all negative things that come out of the movements. You and I agree on that, I'm sure.
If it bleeds, it leads, as they say, yes.
Yeah, and but if it's something, it's negative.
Even the thing in Oakland where, you know, allegedly people weren't throwing water bottles at the police, they were trying to toss water bottles to people who'd been tear gas so they could wipe their eyes out, but that sort of turned into, well, look at this, they were throwing water bottles at the police, and God knows maybe some of them were, and maybe most of them were just trying to help people who've been tear gassed, but, well, you know.
I see your point. You know, I see your point, but I'm just still, my point is that, you know, you say that the only thing that's going to get out, that's getting out, is the negative image, and it's up to the alternative media to put out the positive image. And so it's basically a fight between the good press and the evil press. That's the way I'm looking at it, you know, and so... You know, I really hope that the good press, which is the alternative media, wins out, and eventually, you know, the corporate media is going to have to start, you know, saying, hey, these kids are still hanging in there. And, you know, I read the story about the elderly folks like you and me, who actually went out, and 43 of them got arrested. 43 of them got arrested. That's fucking awesome. I mean, not on their part. I'm sure they didn't like going to jail. But they believed in something enough. They believed in it enough to fucking go to jail. 43 old people. That's fucking awesome.
Well, that is, and as an almost old person myself, you know, every day it seems like I have less and less to lose. That might be a real sign of hope if we can get, you know, someone who's 75 getting rousted by the police or whatever.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what happened in Chicago. You know, those guys in Chicago, those old folks in Chicago, said, "Hey, we're not going to put up with this shit. You know, we're going to stand up and we're going to get arrested." You know, so, you know, and I think that's great. I think that's fucking awesome, and we need more stuff like that. You know, that dispels the whole dirty hippie bullshit that Fox News and everybody else is putting out there.
Well, yeah. So, hey, you old people, get off your big old asses and get your scooters in the streets, damn it.
Yeah, the ones that don't belong to the Tea Party, although I'm sure there are quite a few of them that still belong to the Tea Party. But, you know, hey, we can hope. And, you know, the whole thing is, I think that you and I and people like Zombie and I can find ground, common ground with you and with Mikey and, you know, with other people who don't seem to have the patience to want to wait and see what's going to happen with this movement.
Well, yeah, I want it yesterday, damn it.
I know, but it ain't going to happen that fast, honey. I'm usually the most impatient person in the world, but on this topic, I've got all the time in the world to wait. And if it wasn't for my back, I'd be out. Because we had a bunch of arrests in Fresno last weekend. I'd be up there and be arrested with them, but I can't do it because of my back. So it pisses me off that I can't. But anyway, I'm getting ready to close out the show, Mr. Buffont, because I can only do an hour today. So I do appreciate you calling in. And I hope to talk. I hope to talk to you. I hope to talk to you again next week, and I hope to bring up something that'll stir you, and that maybe eventually you'll be on the same page as I am, 100%.
Well, trust me, I'm in favor. I'm in favor of tearing everything down and burning it to the ground, and we should all be living in huts like they claim we all want to.
Well, that's political nihilism, and in some ways I do believe in that. I think sometimes we have to get that bad before we can build it back up. So you and I can agree to a certain extent that sometimes it has to get really bad before it'll start getting any better. But anyway, darling, thank you for calling in, and I hope to talk to you next week.
Well, I have absolutely nothing planned, so. Don't
all
hold
right.
your breath, but cross your fingers anyway.
All righty. All right, thanks, baby.
You're fighting the good fight, you crazy optimist.
I know I am. All right, thank you, sweetie. I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Bye-bye. All righty. That was my friend, Mr. Buffont, who has a blog that he calls just another blog from L.A. And I think he does believe a lot of what Zombie and I believe, that the movement's a good thing. He just doesn't think it's going to go anywhere, and it's not moving fast enough for him. And I think that's the complaint for a lot of people. We're in a society that wants instant gratification on a lot of things, and it ain't going to happen with this movement. Like I've said before, it took 13 years to get anywhere with the civil rights movement, and I just pray to hell that it's not going to take 13 years for the Occupy Wall Street movement to do something. But anyway, I'm going to end the show today. Let's see. What song should we end the show with today? Oh, let's see. What do we got here? Chicago. I think that's the song. Because some of the stuff in here, I'm not really familiar with what it is. But this show has been brought to you today by Roundtree7.com, that's the number 7. The name of the show is Here Be Monsters, and it's usually hosted by Gwen Berry. I host it on Tuesdays. My name is Dusty. Everything that I've blathered on about today will be linked to on my blog later so that you can check it out in depth. That includes the Inspector General investigating those assholes at the Keystone Pipeline, and how the financial industry collects the most government tax subsidies of any friggin' industry in the United States, which goes to the financial inequities that we've talked about. And one of the biggest bitches they have in the declaration for Occupy Wall Street. But anyhow, we're going to end the show with Chicago. So y'all take care, and I'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Won't you please come to Chicago?